Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. We're back bringing you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. I am your host, as always, Sean Hayes. still recovering from COVID. Starting to feel better. I'm dealing with, apparently I had a secondary infection on top of that I'm dealing with. Just a little tired, and all sorts of congestion stuff dealing with. Otherwise doing okay. So we have some interesting news. Not a whole lot. Again, this is, you know, it's the dead of winter, holidays over. Not that there was a whole lot of news for the holiday season, it turns out. Like, the big news was whenever PS5s were going to be in stock. So really not a whole lot happening right now. And not even anything really happening as far as the Activision Blizzard stuff. Although we do have something tangential to that for this week. Kind of the big stuff is, for me anyway, is that the advanced copies, or I guess the first, you know, the first batch of games being shipped out for Sentinels of the Multiverse Definitive Edition have arrived. And so I was able to take a look at, open it up, do some unboxing, and testing it out, seeing all of the iterations that they did on some of the design and how much it changed things. So going to be talking about that later during our deep dive segment. But why don't we get into some of the news for this week, shall we? All right, so first up, Lego in the news. There was supposed to be an Overwatch 2 Lego set that was due to be released in February. That release is now paused. It is now on hold while the company, quote, reevaluates its relationship with Activision Blizzard. So once again, another business relationship that has been hurt by the actions of a pervasive toxic work culture at Activision Blizzard. It's Lego. Like, you have to, I don't know. It's when Lego takes note, because Lego tries to be at least outwardly tries to seem at least like they're a little more forward thinking. I don't really know where I'm going. I'm still trying to deal with COVID brain right now. It's not great when, you know, a company that knows it would make bank on upcoming Lego sets is like, yeah, you know what? We don't actually need money. So we're not going to do this. It kind of lines up with the whole Overwatch 2 getting delayed, you know, until further notice, basically. That was kind of one of the big things in the news this week. And really the only tangential thing to the Activision Blizzard stuff, unless there was something that happened today that's like late breaking news, but I don't think there was anything. I saw something about the state of California is like appealing the judge's decision to not allow one of the departments to like block a settlement from another one. It's just like the appeal's been filed. There's not really anything outside of that. So, quite possibly the biggest news of the past week is Twitch in the news. So, very popular Twitch streamers such as Pokemane and Disguised Toast have been banned. They have been banned for copyright infringement for streaming full episodes of television shows and anime. So this is something I've seen happen quite a bit. I kind of scratch my head as to how people are kind of getting away with it. It turns out, it was just Twitch wasn't enforcing it, and now they are. So it seems like streaming services in particular are taking note, as well as rights holders. Holy moly! Sorry, just had a whole bunch of Discord notifications all come in at once. That's weird. More of the story. If you know that like music's already sort of a hot button issue, maybe also don't stream full episodes of TV shows or movies. So Twitch has a service where to do like watch parties with stuff that's available on Amazon Prime. Like that's a deal that Amazon's worked out that you can do that. And essentially it gives you like a rebroadcast license to be able to do that specifically through Twitch. It's like, you can't do this by like, you know, queuing up, you know, something on Netflix or Disney Plus. Like, I don't know who in their right mind would be queuing something on Disney Plus. Like, Disney is the prime example. You do not poke Disney on these things. But I don't know. Folks are doing it. I think, you know, regardless of whether you agree or disagree on the philosophical stance of whether you should be able to do it or not, it's not smart. It's not a smart practice. We'll always go out and promote the stream safe stuff that I find that's usable, like especially for music. And also, like, there's already tools that exist for doing stuff on Twitch. Like, I don't understand, like, why this happened, because there's already like opportunities to utilize Twitch in the same manner for stuff that is stream safe. So I don't know if it's just people don't like the content that's available. Yeah, tough luck. Get a license. That's what I got to say about that. So, It's I don't know. And of course, you know, then there's the discourse of they're going to get temporary bans. It's going to get blown up in the media. They're going to come back. They're going to have more viewers than ever because of the whole hype around, like, how dare Twitch ban them for doing stuff that's against the terms of service. So I don't know. You know, I would say if you're a small time creator, use the tools that are available to you, use stuff that you have a license for, and do stream safe stuff. Like, protect yourself. Because you don't know when those requests are going to come. But I would assume, especially now that they're starting to pick up, assume that at some point they're going to come for you. Like, that's what it's going to be. So. All right. Up next, this is a fun story. Bit of an odd story, but this is a fun story. Pokemon Go also in the news. Two LAPD officers have been fired for failing to respond as backup to a robbery call at a nearby Macy's in a mall in LA. Because instead, when the call for backup came, they initially responded no, that they were unavailable. And then, you know, repeated requests came in and further elaborate. And they kept providing other reasons why they weren't available. Turns out they were chasing down Snorlax in Pokemon Go. So, hey, you know, I don't know. It's a weird story. I don't know personally how I feel about it. I really don't know how you feel about the institution of police in general. But that said, you know, for police officers to be like, nah, robbery, whatever, I'm gonna go chase down Snorlax. I don't know. Also, like, why, I don't understand, like, I want to know more about the details of, like, why you need backup. Like, there were officers that left a homicide scene to go provide backup for this robbery. Like, but there weren't any real details provided for the robbery. It was more focused on the two guys, the two officers that got fired for choosing to go do a Snorlax raid. So, I don't know. I don't know. Like, some, I feel like it's a robbery, right? Like, that stuff's insured. Like, you know, go continue doing the homicide scene. Crime scene. Whatever. Anyway. All right. Kirby and the Forgotten Land. We saw this, I believe, at the E3 Nintendo Direct. So this was a trailer for the upcoming 3D Kirby game. It was released today. Showcases all some different powers that you have available, as well as a bunch of mini games and activities you can do. Looks like it's going to have fishing. So definitely I will be on the lookout for that. You know, to see what's involved in that there. But some notable power, you know, it looks like Bandana Waddle Dee with his spear will be in the game, as well as some sort of like Drill Kirby, Blunderbuss Kirby. So to all the people who made a big deal about like, you know, Joker getting into Smash and now Kirby having a gun, I guess now actually canonically will have a gun. I don't know. But it's like a little cartoony blunderbuss that shoots stars. Sword Kirby, Tornado Kirby. Trying to think of what else. I think Cutter Kirby that throws little boomerangs. And it looks similar, a little bit like Super Mario 3D World. As opposed to, at least from what I saw, it looks more like that than Mario Odyssey. But I'm sure we'll see more of it in the coming weeks, because its release date is currently slated for March 25th. So we're talking about 2.5 months or so, maybe. About that. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, I'm hoping that we finally get a really interesting, and it'd be nice to have a 3D Kirby game. We've never had one before. Kirby's traditionally always been relegated to 2D. I think it'd be interesting to see how, especially with his flight, how that impacts exploration and maneuverability around that play area. So definitely I'm excited for it. You know, I'm hoping that it'll be pretty good. Looks like a lot of Waddle Dee stuff happening everywhere. So we'll see what's going on with that. So that is going to wrap up our news for this week. So it's time to switch things over to our deep dive. All right. So here we go, folks. Sentinels of the Multiverse. definitive edition. It's finally here. You know, all in all, with all of like the supply chain issues and everything, it actually came pretty quickly for a Kickstarter game. I have to say, so a lot of the fresh coat of paint, it got, it kind of makes a difference. You know, I was surprised at how much of a difference it made. So for those that are familiar, with what Sentinels of the Multiverse is, Sentinels is a cooperative, superhero, versus supervillain card game, where you, each of the players, is a superhero, that is collectively fighting against one supervillain as a team, and at a location. And basically each hero gets a deck, the villain gets a deck, and the location gets a deck. And the way you play the game is you're playing cards from your deck, and some of them have powers that you can use, some of them are like single-use stuff, some of them provide passive effects, and the villain, you know, has similar cards of their own, but the villain will have sort of instructional rules on the cards, as well as on like a placard to tell you like how to play that villain. So that way, it's kind of almost like a way to do like a GM-less role-playing game almost. And then the environment has similar stuff where, but it's on a much smaller scale where it has its own deck of a much smaller, pack of cards. The original game has been out for a while. They did a whole bunch of expansions for it and whole fully fleshed out sort of comic universe for this game. And they decided, you know, it's been long enough that they wanted to go back and they wanted to like address some of the issues that have kind of come up over the years of the base game, you know, and as a way to like streamline it. The artist has said, like, you know, I'd love to go back and redo all of the art to do it better, because I'm not happy with how the art looks in the original version. So that's sure. And they ran a Kickstarter, was very successful. And we finally got the results. So for those who are familiar with Sentinels, a lot of the things that they did are subtle, right? So they changed a lot of the card text to introduce like keywords, for things that like didn't have keywords before. So notably, like for mechanics. So things like bury, collect, discover, reaction, salvage, summon. These are all like new, an ally. These are all new useful terms. You know, before they might say something like search your deck for an item card, and put it into your hand, then shuffle your deck. And instead of writing all that out now, that's now represented by, like the collect mechanic. And so it just says collect one item card. And that way then like it keeps the card pretty clean and allows them to free up a lot more space for things like flavor text, which unfortunately they did change a lot of the flavor text, from the previous edition, I believe. So some heroes are for the most part the same. You know, most of the villains appear to be the same, with some exceptions. I played a game earlier today where, it was sort of what the game all traditionally recommends as the starter villain. No matter which edition you play, which is Baron Blade. He's supposed to be sort of mad scientist trying to, you know, pull the moon into the earth and destroy the earth with it. Some of the differences are, all of the villain placards are now like on a much bigger, card stock. So for those who are watching live or watching the VOD here, so instead of the standard sort of playing card size, like I have in my hand right here, which is, you know, standard, like poker playing card size, it is, now, you know, roughly twice the size, of that. And I think they had similar cards like this in the, is it Vengeance? There was like a Vengeance expansion where it introduced like villain teams, and each of the mini villains had a larger card like this. But this is now, it has sort of the rules for how the villain flips, you know, all put like in a smaller box in the corner, what happens during the start phase, the advanced rules. And then for the setup, instead of having it all be on that sort of, you know, all cramming it into one little tiny regular playing card, it now has that written along the side. This allows it to have like a much bigger area for art and for sort of background art and everything, just as a way to like really reinforce visually, like this is a villain card. Previously, the villain cards had no art because you had to fit all of the villain rules on a single playing card size, often double-sided. And so there was no room for art now. And you had to rely on like the actual cards in the deck. Now you have like a big visual icon of, or a visual representation of like the villain's art. And it now, because you're able to spread out a lot of that text, and because it's condensing a lot of that terminology into keywords, is it's freeing up a lot of design space to allow you to actually put the written amount of text in the written rules in a smaller area on the card. They did the same thing for heroes as well. Heroes used to be, you would have a hero card that was part of the deck, it's the same size. So, you often had to like, I can't count how many times, we'd finish up a game and somebody would accidentally shuffle their hero card into their hero deck, and we have to go back through, find it, and like separate it. Now, they are also a much larger, like tarot-sized card that again has a nice big splash image of the hero, their title, their name, their hit points, and then like a big box for their starting power. So that like it really makes it stand out and say like, okay, this is my hero card. And that way then like I won't get this mixed up with the rest of my deck. So another thing that they did was they sort of changed the overall flow of the turn, just in that they introduced set start and end phases. So it used to be the case where you had three phases for your turn. It was you play a card, you do a power, then you draw a card. And now what they do is, because there were so many heroes that had abilities that like that went off at the start of their turn or at the end of their turn, they also include a start phase and an end phase. And they do this for villains and environments as well. So now it's spelled out where it will say start phase, this thing happens, or end phase, this thing happens. And it's nice, and it's like done in like a big, like these are all done in like big, colored bold text, so that it's really easy to go look at the card and just do a quick scan to see like, okay, do I have any green text? You know, which, you know, that works if you're not colorblind. If you are colorblind, it's still big enough that like it stands out from the rest of the text on the page, on the card itself. Let's see if I can find an example. Okay, so so for those that are looking here, right, you can see, so like this line, what appears to be a line right here, actually says end phase, right? And you can see that it stands out on the page because it's red, right, and it has a lot of contrast, but also because it's just so big and because it has enough contrast, with the white background that if you are colorblind, it's still going to stand out from the rest of the card itself to let you know there's a thing going on here you need to take a look at it. Unfortunately, it's a thing where when you're designing a physical product that, you can't like just apply some filters to like you can with a video game. You have to figure out other ways to design stuff if you're normally going to rely on colors, especially like the primary colors of red, green, and blue, which are often affected by color blindedness. But I do like that they spell it out. So it made it really easy. And it made it much more streamlined for me to like go through and not forget when things are supposed to go off. They also, so that right there is a big quality of life improvement, right? So between keywords to reduce the amount of text that's on the page to make the cards easier to read, and then increasing, and then introducing like these like increased sized font, phase notifiers, there's also now new tokens, right, and better design tokens. So things that boost damage, right, are now basically like they're like chevron shaped. Things that like boost or diminish damage are now chevron shaped, and so things where the chevron points up increase damage dealt by or dealt to a target, and things where the chevron's pointing down like reduce damage dealt by or dealt to a target. Also all color coded, but they also have really big black or white +1 or -1. And then the text, signifies damage dealt to or damage dealt by. So generally, black text is beneficial for the target, and white text is not beneficial for the target. So there are fewer damage counters because in lieu of using damage counters to represent hit points for the heroes and villains, there are now spinners that you build, right? They send you the components as part of the game with little spinner tracks and everything. So now hero hit points and villain hit points are governed by spinner dials. So no more having to like go fish through a bag of one tokens and 10 tokens and 5 tokens and needing like 25 hit point tokens and 50 hit point tokens. You won't need them because now the damage markers are only used for minions, and minions rarely go higher than like, jeez, I think the T-Rex might be the biggest one at like 25 or something. So now it's much easier. It's much more manageable to keep track of stuff. It did take a little bit of adjustment to go from being able to just like pick up physical damage tokens, represent like 1, 2, 3, 4, individual points of damage, to like having to do clicks along and keeping track of that. So I would say if you are a visual person, a little bit more mental math required, unless you can readily adjust to doing clicks along a spinner track and counting that way, as opposed to being able to pick up like, okay, well, this is 1, this is 2, this is 5, so that's 7, and picking up like physical tokens. That said, I mean, if you still have the original version of the game, you have plenty of damage tokens. You can still use them if you wish. It's just they introduce the spinners as a way to keep that more manageable. And I really like the spinners. It was so fun to just be able to like put something together as part of setting up the game. Which I have to say, first time setup, there's a lot of tokens and a lot of stuff to punch out. And then of course, assembling the spinners, the villain spinner, like is in a couple separate parts. So like it, you kind of have to wrap your head around it a little bit. They do include instructions in the, rule book for doing that. So that was appreciated. Let's see what else. Oh, so, I mentioned that it feels like most of the heroes are about the same. Some of the heroes and some of the villains, they did make changes too, where if they felt that the play style of that hero, there was like a lot of elements that didn't mesh well together. They would go back and they reworked some of the heroes. So Bunker being an example. So Bunker, kind of like a little bit of like Captain America meets Iron Man, in that it's like I guess the best example would be like Rhodey, if we're talking MCU equivalent, where a soldier that gets essentially powered armor, and has like different attack modes and weaponry built into the suit. So, previously, Bunker basically had two varieties of cards, where a lot of them were various weapon cards, where like you would equip it and then you would get a new ability that you could use, you know, to deal damage to various targets, and mode cards, which would allow you to essentially it removed a basic action that you could do on your turn to improve like other actions that you could do. So for example, there would be like turret mode was you can't play cards, but you get an extra power each turn. You know, to replicate that, like you could use more weapons, sort of a thing. Or recharge mode, which was you can't play cards, and I think you can't use powers, but you take less damage and you, like you're able to draw an extra card every turn. And that lasted until as long as you can't, like it would last as, until you decide to play a new mode card, or at the start of your turn, you could just discard it and cancel it. Now, they only last one round. So like you play it, you get the benefits of the thing, and at the start of the next round, like at the start of your next turn, it's gone. So you only have to worry about it for one turn. And they like immediately do something. So instead of being sort of like, I'm going to manage my modes and like switch between them over the course of a fight, you know, which is basically like, I'm going to build up a big hand size and then switch to turret mode and then, you know, just turret mode for the rest of the game, until I need to switch to something else. You know, it's now sort of like, I can play this to get like a temporary advantage and then shift course to something else automatically. And then all of the weapon cards now require ammunition. So the weapon cards are called ordnance cards, and they now require ammo. And the ammo comes in the form of you take cards from your deck and you put them under an ordnance card. Now, all of the ordinances have an ability where at the start of your turn, you can move a card from the top of your deck and you put it under that card. There are other cards that allow you to take more cards from your deck and put it under there, or modes that allow you to do that. One of the things that I didn't see when I was playing as Bunker today that I think would have been interesting, and very easy to implement, is a card, whether it's a one-shot card or if it's, you know, maybe it's like a piece of equipment or an ongoing card or something that allows you to move ammunition from one ordnance to another. Because as it stands, you can't. Because, like, if you play something under a card, like, it's under that card until you use it. It would have been nice to see something to, like, move stuff around. They also kind of tightened up a lot of the abilities. So, like, Bunker used to have, like, a self-maintenance mode or something, or self-maintenance thing, where as an ability, you could regain 2 hit points, right? That's now been replaced by, like, a reactive shield where you can block damage. And then if you still take damage, you recover hit points, which allows you to essentially, like, block up to 4 points of damage as long as you have at least 4 health. It's like, or at least 2 health, like, well, no. So as long as you have the 2 health to lose and then regain, you can mitigate four damage with that. So yeah, it was a lot more fun than previous iterations of Bunker. And Bunker's new power has been changed, like his base power, so that you can either draw a card or you can move ammo into an ordnance slot. So like, that's cool. You know, because like, you might not care about, like, you might have a full hand size. You might not care, like, you have stuff to deal with situations. You might just worry more about, like, feeding your weapons. And so, you know, you might just do that instead. I think Legacy didn't seem to have changed all that much. And then Absolute Zero, I was disappointed because I thought they were going to change Absolute Zero's base power, because Absolute Zero's base power, his base ability, is he deals himself 1 fire damage or 1 cold damage. So he deals himself 1 point of damage. That's it. He has cards that allow you to do stuff when he takes damage. This means that you essentially can't use his power unless you get one of those cards in play, like, as soon as possible. And I think that's a design flaw. And I'm going to have to play more with the newer version, because it feels, at least, so in the original version, it was, there were only a couple copies of each card that allowed you to do that. And, you know, if you didn't get either of them out, like, you just had a bad time because you couldn't do anything with your power. So, like, it was often, I'm going to play a card and my turn's over, as opposed to, you know, other characters who are like, I'm going to play a card, I'm going to do a thing, or I might get to do 2 things, or I might get to, like, play multiple cards and do all sorts of stuff. I think they did a good job at rebalancing his deck so that there were more copies of these, you know, ultimately, 2 different cards that allowed you to actually use his base power. And they removed a lot of the other weird stuff in his deck that, like, it was very finicky and often difficult to work with. And they really tightened it up. And I found that it was like, this is great. Like, I often then had multiples of the cards that, you know, I needed. And I was like, oh man, you know, if there was a way for me to, like, if there was a way for me to, like Bunker, where I could then, like, turn these into extra things, that would have been great. But there was plenty of exciting moments where it was like getting out all sorts of stuff. And now there's a way to actually combo abilities with Absolute Zero, because when you play like sort of his base kit cards, it gives you an extra card play. So now it's like, well, I'm going to play that, and then I'm going to play this, and then I'm going to play one more thing that also lets me play a thing. So at one point I played 5 cards in 1 turn. And it was just to, like, put cards into play. And I was like, cool. All right, that's, like, turn 2. We're ready to go. Like, we have everything we need now. This is great. So I don't know if I just got lucky, or if they actually retooled and rebalanced his deck to the point that this is a consistent play. This is what an average game for Absolute Zero will look like now, as opposed to, yeah, the game's half over and I'm still not able to do anything. So, like, I don't know. Like, it might be better if I just get knocked out because then I can actually do stuff. So yeah. So I use those three against Baron Blade. Seemed like a very standard Baron Blade game. You know, I did they actually recommend like that you don't shuffle Baron Blade's deck because they've pre-sorted it to what they think is a good play experience. So like, I appreciate that, just being like, yeah, we already did the work for you. And they also like, if you know, if you shuffle it later, they tell you what the order is in the rule book so that you can go back and like reorder the deck back and be like, this is what we recommend for, you know, a good like first time, try and get your feet wet, playthrough of Sentinels. One of the villains that they did change, that I'm excited to try, is Omnitron, which is basically a sentient robot factory. That you know, previously every turn would go from being manufacture robots to turn into a giant rampaging robot factory, and then like would flip flop every turn. But ultimately, like, the only thing that would change is he, like, whether he, like, plays a card or shuffles cards back into his deck. Now, every card in Omnitron's deck has two different abilities. One based on whether Omnitron is acting as a robotics factory or as a rampaging war machine. And because Omnitron flips every turn still, that means... each card now does two different things on every other turn. And they also rebalance it so that there's less, like, this card comes out and suddenly the game's over. Because there was one where it was electromagnetic pulse or something like that, where it was a device that had 15 hit points. It's pretty big. That it was, like, at the start of the villain turn. If you played it, it would kick off at the start of the next turn, or the next round, rather, would deal damage to all heroes equal to the number of hit points left on the card. So, like, it's a little complicated, and it's a lot of damage. So suddenly now, like, it kind of screeches the game to a halt, because now everybody has to shift focus and turn their attention to that one thing. That's now gone. It has been replaced with, let's see if I can find it, Electropulse Explosive. So it's got 7 hit points now. During when Omnitron's Exterminate phase, which is when he's a rampaging robot, this card deals, So H, which is a signifier in Sentinels for the number of hero decks that are in the game. So this means, typically it means the number of players, but if you're playing with less than 3 people, so like if you're playing with 1 player or 2 players, it's recommended that you use multiple hero decks, right? So it basically means the number of heroes in the game, and that doesn't change if a hero's knocked out. That's something to remember. So if you're playing with like 3 players and you're using 3, everybody's got 1 hero. So this would be the 3 hero targets with the highest HP, 3 lightning damage each. So it makes it less swingy, right? Because now it's, you always know how much it's going to be dealing every time. And the way it's worded, right, because you might think, like, well, that's just, why don't they just deal it to every hero then? Because it means if a hero has enough hit points, they might get hit more than once. Then in the fabricate phase, which is when Omnitron switches back to a robot factory, until the villain's start phase, it reduces damage dealt to device cards by 1. So that is an example of, like, all the different abilities that this has. So like, here's another one, like S-84 automation automaton drones, which used to be like whatever, not a big deal. It's just like a little sort of minion bot that we're going to take out. 7 hit points during the exterminate phase, deals 3 hero targets with the highest HP -1 energy image each. So like, you know, that's bad. Like, it could be worse, but you know, it's not great. And then during the fabricate phase, discover 1 device card. So discover is you reveal cards from the top of the deck until you reveal the indicated card type. Shuffle the other revealed cards into the deck. Play the cards in the order revealed. So this is essentially you get to play, like, you reveal cards from the top of the deck until you reveal a device card, and then you play that device card. And if it's another automaton drone, you do it again. If it's during the fabricate phase. So, yeah. I like the fact that it took Omnitron really should have been like a very complicated villain, but due to how the mechanics worked out, was actually like a very easy villain to fight often. And so like was rated like with very low difficulty in the base game. Now Omnitron's sort of around the middle of the pack in terms of difficulty, which I think is nice. I think it's nice to like rebalance and retool things. And then other villains, which were harder, like the Matriarch and Citizen Dawn, now have been reduced in difficulty. And so they're much more manageable. So I like that. I also like, so you might be thinking like, Sean, base game, what are you talking about with the Matriarch? What's going on there? So it turns out, so the base game now includes like most of who was included in the base version of Sentinels, in the original game, as well as the Prime Wardens. So this includes things like, so in the Definitive Edition, in the core box, you get, Absolute Zero, you get Bunker, you get Captain Cosmic, who's sort of like Green Lantern, you get Fanatic, you get Haka, you get Legacy, Raw, Tachyon, Tempest, the Argent Adept, the Wraith, and Unity. Like, many of those were expansion, like, in expansion packs and later expansions. And those are all the heroes that you get. The villains that you get are Baron Blade, Citizen Dawn, Grand Warlord Voss, who are all base game, Omnitron, who is the fourth base game one. And then you also get the Matriarch and Akash Buta, who are on the more complex side. You know, Akash Buta, renowned for having the most hit points, I think the most hit points of any villain in the game, unless one of the later ones has more. I could be wrong. And then environments, you get Megalopolis, Freedom Tower, Insula Primaris, which is shot way up in difficulty. The Ruins of Atlantis, the Wagner Mars Base, and Magmaria. So, a little set, like, Visionary is missing. I think that might be it. You know, I know Prime Wardens also includes, like, the Naturalist, which, you know, I feel like they'll do in a later sort of expansion. I know They have on the back of the lore book that they also include to kind of explain sort of what's going on with Sentinels and that stuff, that they're doing Rook City Renegades. So all the Rook City stuff will be sort of the next Kickstarter project that they do, which I'm excited for, because that has some interesting mechanics and heroes in there. Also very difficult, so... so there is that. Sorry, have to keep hydrated so that my voice doesn't give out. There's one other piece that they have included in this game that I haven't tried yet. They are event cards. So how these work is essentially if you're going to play Sentinel's story mode or do a campaign mode. This is also how they introduce sort of villain variants. So instead of now like having all sorts of variant villains, as well as like variant heroes, what they're doing is there will be events where it has like sort of specific mechanics to add to the game. And if you complete it, you then get to keep the backside as a special ability that any one hero can use at one point during the game. And when you're doing an event, it will tell you how many events, how many event cards you're able to benefit from during that game. I think it's really interesting. There are also critical events, and that's where you get, the villain variants. So, critical events include like the Mad Bomber, Baron Blade, Sunrise, Citizen Dawn, Censor, who is a variant-ish for Warlord Voss. Cosmic Omnitron. The Moktriarch, which is sort of like a clone version of the Matriarch. And then Akash Mecha. So a cyber version of Akash Buta. These are great. So essentially you also get like a bunch of variant villains in the box as well that like were previously done as special promos. I like the fact that they're giving you a bunch of variant stuff, as just a base game mechanic, as opposed to requiring you to like go to special events or buy like a big, collection of promo cards. And then they also include, there is a bunch of, they call first appearance heroes, which are variant heroes. And what they do is they have different cover art to make it look like an older comic book and an older sort of retro style. And they have different powers. So to introduce like a different kind of play style, but I don't know if they're. Oh, there we go. First appearance. Okay. I don't know if they're going to do other variant types or if they're just going to focus on first appearance for all of the heroes going forward. I kind of like that. You know, and I'd love to see them focus on doing first appearance and then maybe go back, you know, like when they've done everything, then maybe go back and do, you know, like a special run for every hero. Because the deck doesn't change at all. So, you know, I feel like there's a little bit of limited potential for different play styles with that. All in all, I have to say I like the changes that they did. It was so much easier to keep track of what was going on. Sentinels in my various game groups that I've had over the years has been renowned for like everybody loves playing it. If you play it, especially after like if you play it after playing a few other games in a game night and like it's the last game of the night, it quickly devolves into like nobody knows what's going on because there's a lot of math involved and there's a lot of stuff to keep track of. To the point that like when I started playing the Sentinels, there's a digital version of Sentinels on Steam and on like iOS and stuff. It was a godsend because it kept track of how a lot of the mechanics happened. And like, especially when you start redirecting stuff that gets damage multipliers, it gets pretty, pretty hairy pretty quickly. Or when things start chaining, so it's like, oh, well, this happens, and then this causes that to happen, and this causes that to happen. You know, for a card game to end up flowing better when done as a digital card game, it, you know, it can get pretty daunting. And trying to explain to somebody, like, that it's actually, like, when you get down to it, like, it's actually pretty simple to play because there's not a whole lot of general rules that happen. It's when you get into, like, what happens on the cards, and then, like, sitting them down in a game, quickly overwhelming. This goes a long way into addressing those issues, and just making it a little more accessible to play, which is always good. You know, the art looks great. It has a much more iconic feel to it while still remaining in that Sentinels art style. And I like the fact that the new card design emphasizes the art and the design of the cards more than just being like, here's a big brick of text for mechanics. So, all in all, I'm very happy with it. I'm super excited to play it with my friends once I get better. Also, it came with a bunch of foil cards, which, as far as I know, are just literally foil versions of the existing cards. So one of the things I'm going to do is investigate, looking at card sleeves. Maybe, I don't know if they're needed because it's a cooperative game, but you know, whatever. All in all, I'm super pumped. You know, I love Sentinels before, so I'm super stoked for this. I'm definitely going to have to try out every hero to see who got a rework and who didn't. All in all, two thumbs up. Great job, Greater Than Games. And I'm super glad that, you know, that your game finally was able to get out after the months and months of sitting on container ships. So good on you. That's an example of how to do a Kickstarter well, where they did zero stretch goals. And they were like, any extra money that we raise is going into getting this product as good as it can be, and then getting it to you as quickly as we can. And it turned out to work out in their favor. So, great job, Greater Than Games. All right. That's going to wrap up our deep dive segment. So, really quick, we're going to talk about Questlog. All right, Questlog is going to be quick this week because I'm still focusing on getting better. Did not color a comic. I'm sorry, folks. I set a very low bar for myself, and I still did not meet that. I didn't even do a new comic. So the next comic stream that I do is going to be to do next week's comic. Ate through my backlog, but it's, you know, ultimately, you know, I ended up going to urgent care, and I did test positive for COVID. They also said, based on when your symptoms started, you know, you're already past the quarantine. Sounds like you've also got a sinus infection on top of stuff. So, good luck with that. And they gave me a prescription for antibiotics. So it's dealing with that for as long of a period, you know, it's, you know, and the fact that everyone in my family has COVID is, we're focusing on that right now, is trying to get better, trying to just not be snotty messes, you know, and getting plenty of rest. So, ultimately, goal's going to be the same, get one comic done, you know, and if it takes me 10 weeks to do it, it takes me 10 weeks to do it. You know, and I will do it. But at this point is by the end of 2022, the goal is to have a physical 8-bit adventures chapter 1 book. So So we'll see how that goes, folks. All right. That is going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you all for joining me for episode 250. We didn't even talk about that. 250 episodes of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. That's 250 weeks. That is about 5 years of a podcast. I think it's a little more than that, because I think it's technically started in 2015 or 2016. But yeah, this has been, you know, there's been ups and downs, kind of in a down period right now. Still kind of trying to figure out a format. You know, it would be nice to have another host, but, you know, kind of working with what I got at the moment. But, yeah. Just, I can't stop marveling at 250 episodes. That is an achievement, folks, for podcasts, right? If only for the fact that I refuse to quit. So, if you want to see more of my stuff besides the 8-Bit Adventures podcast, but you can find that too, check out my website. It's over at 8-bitadventures.com. Over there, you can find the 8-Bit Adventures comic, where all this started. You can find my portfolio. You can find the 8-Bit Adventures podcast, Stardew Sundays VODs, all that good stuff. If you would like to help support the 250 episodes, I'm still not going to get over it, of this podcast, of episodes of, Berkshire Bites, Tales of Jamora, the comic. If you want to help support that, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/8bitadventures. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month, and you get early access to comics. You get exclusive behind-the-scenes access to some D&D content. There are patron-exclusive comics up on there. All sorts of cool stuff. Big shout-out and thank you to all of my patrons. So I really want to thank you for your support. Thank you. Just thank you. Most of you have been here the whole time, you know, for the whole 250. So thank you for that. So glad to have you on this wild ride. And looking forward to many more episodes. Also for those of you who subscribe on Twitch, thank you as well. For helping out watching live. Also, don't forget, if you have an Amazon Prime subscription, you get one free Twitch Prime subscription that you can use on a channel of your choice every month. Not saying you have to, but please consider throwing that free, because it is free. You get it as part of your Amazon Prime subscription. You know, wouldn't mind having that sub thrown my way. Just saying. Our opening theme is one up by Professor Shy Guy. It's been that case since day one. If you want to go check out his work, go check out ProfessorShyGuy.bandcamp.com. As always, big thanks to Professor Shy Guy for letting us use this track. He's great. So that, folks, is going to wrap things up. So as always, for 250 episodes, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.